You're listening to Marvelous Harry, a novel in five fractals, performed and written by Mark A. Rayner. For more information about where to get the book, go to marvelousharry.ca. Part 4, The Lizard's Pleasure, Chapter 1. The next morning I took Nick back to his apartment. He seemed to be feeling okay, though he was still walking a little strangely, like his legs were unable to bear all his weight or something. He desperately wanted to get his computer out and write something down, either in his journal or as part of his opus. I didn't ask him. I made sure he was going to be okay, and then headed straight to the Phallus building. I needed to talk with Helena. She knew Shoot. She worked at Gargantuan. She was the key to rescuing Ariadne and Nick. The building's atrium and lobby were public spaces, so I had no trouble there. I didn't even have trouble getting onto the elevators. I'd forgotten that Helena's department lived high up in the Phallus, in a sensitive area of the glands that was restricted to employees. I got off the public elevator on the 17th floor, looking for the next set to take me up to her offices, and a security guard was stationed there to prevent just that from happening. The other set of elevators were beyond the public elevators, behind glass doors and the aforementioned guard. He looked professional, though he was a bit pasty from working indoors and a bit pudgy from too much sitting. Still, he looked fit and well-trained to me. "Excuse me, sir, can I help you?" he asked. "No, I'm fine." "You don't seem to be wearing a Guardian ID, sir." "Why do security people always call you sir? It's like they're trying to piss you off with false politeness." I didn't bite, though. That's their first line of defense, make you do something stupid. "Oh, sorry," I said, pulling my old ID out of my pocket. "I always forget to put it on." He glanced at it, and I don't know how he could spot that it was a couple of days out of date. There's probably some dead giveaway, but when I looked at the other people's walking by, yes, he was checking my ID and those of the other people going to the gag-only elevators at the same time, I couldn't see what it was. "That's not a valid ID, sir." His voice had a little more of an edge to it now, as though he was saying to me, "I may be a security guard, but I'm not an idiot." I didn't think he was an idiot, really. I would never assume that about someone just because of their job. "What is your business on the upper floor, sir?" He kept saying sir like it was some kind of insult. I mean, I'm sure he was saying sir, but the subtext was all different. Actually, what I heard was different. So while he said, "What is your business on the upper floors, sir?" what I heard was, "What is your business on the upper floors, you lying sack of shit?" It kind of threw me. "I'm going to see a friend," I barked at him. I was just shocked that he was calling me a lying sack of shit. Really, such language. "Well, your friend," he said friend as though I was delusional, as though my friend was a 6-foot white rabbit called Magnus McBunnystein or something. "Your friend should have arranged for a pass if you're visiting him." "Her. She's the VP of marketing." "Ah," the guard said, now convinced that I was a lying sack of shit. "I'm sure that Ms. Borovitch would remember to make the proper arrangements. She has guests visit all the time, you filthy, duplicitous douchebag." I stammered, thinking, did he just call me a filthy, duplicitous douchebag? How does we respond politely to that? "She doesn't know I'm coming," I explained. "At least, I didn't call her before I came. I just thought I'd drop in." "Well, you mendacious cockbiter, the upper floors of Guardian Enterprises are not public space, so you can't just drop in, you deceitful arse-looking son of a dog's whore." I had to hand it to him. He might have been a security guard, but he had a mastery of sarcasm that would make a Canadian proud and an Arab-like facility with classic-sounding insults. It was probably for the best that I reacted with surprise, not anger, at his adroit verbal abuse. The weird thing was, it was almost as though I was hearing his thoughts, not his words. A part of me wondered if it was a side effect of my visions from Antonia the Shade, or if I was just going nuts. Considering the company I kept, it would probably not be noticed for some time if the latter. So I ventured a solution. "Perhaps we can call her now and ask if she'll give me a verbal pass." "I don't think it would be appropriate to bother her with that request right now, sir." Thank God we are back to an actual sir. "Well, I'll tell you what," I said. "I'll call her from my cell phone, and maybe she could send someone down." "That is an excellent idea," the guard said. "Please return to the public corridor to make your phone call, you miserable toad pustule." Chastened, and even more worried about my sanity, I returned to the corridor within the public elevator space and called Elena's office. I got her voicemail, and thought I'd try the main number. I got her assistant, who said that Helena was busy, but that she could leave a message. "Is there any way you could sign me in so I could wait for Helena up there?" I asked. "No," she almost shouted into the phone, and then laughed nervously. "No, I'm afraid I'd get in trouble for that, Mr. Goodman. Big trouble for everyone." I couldn't hear any insult in that, so I asked her, "Well, just let her know I drop by then. I'll call her later." I had one other avenue that I could try, but I could feel the security guard's eyes on me. He was just coming out with another whole raft of juicy insults. I could just feel it, and I wasn't sure I could stand any more of them, even if he was only thinking them, not verbalizing them. While I waited for the doors to open to a public elevator so I could get back to the relative safety of the lobby, I heard one last thought. Yeah, you slink back downstairs, you deceitful little carbuncle. Little? I wasn't as muscular as the guy, but at least a couple of inches taller. Maybe he wasn't that talented after all. Chapter 2. Shoot had dropped in on Helena unexpectedly that morning, again. And while I was dealing with Security Officer Pottymouth, she was up in her expansive office, supporting Shoot's delusions of kingship. Not that he needed much help. It was a repeat of their previous encounters, position-wise, but this time out, Helena was receptive in body only. As Shoot shot, she pretended to climax too, and in the brief post-coital glow, she thought she'd try to ask Shoot a few more questions. You know, I was trying to get hold of Larry Smetchoff the other day, and his number is classified. Couldn't get it. Why would you want to talk to the lech? Shoot asked. Aren't I enough for you? Of course, Ted. But I had a question about one of our new sequencers, and he's the expert, right? Why don't you just ask me? Because you have enough on your plate. You don't need to answer silly marketing questions. What was it? What? The marketing question. Oh, I was wondering if there could be other uses for the sequencer that we haven't explored. Shoot laughed and said, a highly advanced gene sequencer? I know you don't have a science major, Borovitch, but even you should know it's not good for anything else. What about manipulation? What? Gene manipulation. Isn't that possible? That could be lucrative. Where the hell are you getting this? You ever read Marvel Comics when you were a kid? No, you're not getting this shit out of a comic book, are you? No, but that's why I wanted to talk with Larry. I thought he could fill me in. Oh, he'd like that. So I can talk with him? Yeah, sure. I'll let him explain why the new sequencer can't actually manipulate genes. I don't have time for it. Great. You're a curious monkey. First Oberon and now Larry's little science project. So in return for my patience, I want you to think about something. What's that? Well, as much as I enjoy these office encounters, I'm finding them a little less saucy than before. Would you ever consider adding a third party? Helena felt like the room was swaying. An earthquake? No, it was just the rocking caused by having the carpet pulled from underneath her. She said. You don't have to answer right now, but I want you to think about it. We could really work, you know. Helena said again. Who did you... Male or female? Female, of course. Oh, okay, she said. Really, you'd do it? You'd have a menage? He asked, stretching out the word so it sounded more like me-nage. No, I mean, I understand. I mean, let me think about it. Excellent, Shoot grinned. Thought about how it was going to upset Johnny to see him romping with Helena and his youngest sister at the same time. The temperature in the room dipped precipitously, and Helena pulled her blouse closed, shivering. Shoot's face changed from pleasure to an intense look of hatred, focused not at Helena, but at a point behind her to her right. His light blue eyes, normally a little alien-looking and distant, took on an altogether frightening intensity. What is it, Ted? He did not respond. Helena got a bit nervous and added, just a little time, that's all I'm asking. You'll see, Shoot growled. Furrows creased his forehead and his upper lip lifted in a sneer. Of course, he was talking to Johnny. But how was Helena to know? It terrified her. It was much more intense than the day before in his office. She'd always thought of Shoot as a bit unstable, a narcissist certainly, but never a full-blown carpet-chewing lunatic. I'll see what? Helena asked, almost a whisper. But Shoot didn't respond to her, instead watching the corner of her office with malice and listening intently. Well, you'll see how well that works, Shoot shouted. Helena backed away from Shoot, inching her way towards the door when the movement caught his attention. You'll see how well it will work, he said in a softer voice to her, looking right at her. What? The threesome, he answered. It'll be great, and I'll tell Larry to call you right away. He can steer you straight, but only on the magnet thing, right, Borovitch? He laughed. Then he zipped up and exited, upstage, leaving the door to her office open and a fine view of her half-dressed, long-legged figure for everyone in her department to see. Luckily, only her executive assistant was in eyeshot, and of course, Sheila knew what was going on. My God, Miss Borovitch, are you okay? Her assistant asked as Helena closed her door. Yeah, I'm fine, or I will be. Give me a few minutes before you bring me anything in, though, okay? Sure. Can I get you something? A pitcher of margaritas would be good, but I'll just get some water out of my fridge. And Sheila? Yes, Miss Borovitch? Who heard that? Just me. Is he, okay? She looked around and circled her index finger next to her head. Helena just shrugged and said, please don't mention it to anyone. Sure, Sheila said. Oh, and your friend Rob called while... That boy always did have good timing. I told him you were busy this morning. I'll call him back myself, but no other business for the next hour or so, okay? I have to get a bit more done on the Oberon thing. Helena finished closing the door and sighed. Her boss was insane. Even worse than that, she was doing him. And he was insane. Full bore, clown-footed, moon-bang, insane. She tapped her teeth and looked out at her view, the spectacular view of the city and the bay, obscured somewhat by low rain clouds that were sweeping off the mountains, turning the sight into a Zen painting. She walked towards the window, which filled the back wall of her office, and noticed her reflection. Shit, she was still undone. She stopped tapping her teeth long enough to do up her blouse and fix her skirt. What was Shoot seeing? What was he talking to? Helena wondered. It was almost like there was another person here. Maybe he's got some kind of serious personality disorder, in addition to being a total bastard. What if he's actually a sociopath? Holy shit, have I been fucking a sociopath? It was an uncomfortable question, but at least she'd posed it before pieces of her started making appearances at geographically disparate beaches. His question was a doozy, too. He might be a carpet-chewing lunatic, and he wanted her to do a little rug-munching. Or was he a rug-munching lunatic, and he wanted her to do a little carpet-chewing? She always got that phrase wrong. She wasn't about to ask one of her researchers to look it up, and she didn't have the time to do it herself right now. She went into her private bathroom, a perk of her VP position, and attempted to make herself presentable. Her clothes were wrinkled hopelessly, so she changed and reapplied some makeup. She just finished and opened a bottle of water from her fridge when the phone rang. It was Larry the Lech. "The boss said you wanted to talk with me about my work," he said. No innuendo, no come on. She did a sarcasm check. It was clean, professional, surprising. "Yes, he said I was way off base, but I wanted to check with you. Do you have time for a quick visit?" "Normally, I'd love to have you down here in my lab," he said, chuckling at his prickish turn of phrase. "But this project is restricted. The only other people with clearance are the boss, my lab techs, and the guinea pigs." Helena chose to ignore the double entendre and asked, "Guinea pigs? You know, research subjects. The sad sacks that sign up for our experiments. Are they in any danger?" "Of course not. But you know, being a piece of human experimental apparatus is kind of sad. I mean, we pay well, but, you know." "Well, I don't. How about I meet you in the cafeteria over lunch, then?" "Sure." The gargantuan cafeteria, was one of the places that I could not get to because I was no longer an employee. Safely hidden in one of the mid to upper level floors, the gagateria was actually pretty nice. It looked more like a restaurant than what you may think of when you hear the word cafeteria. The tables all had linen tablecloths on them, and though it had no waiters, there were several people on duty during the lunchtime who would clean tables between diners. The food itself was actually pretty good, too, so I never really knew why Helena called it the gagateria. Perhaps because she first started flirting with Shoot at a get-to-know-the-brass luncheon a few years before. At any rate, Larry was positively humming with barely concealed lust when he met Helena just before the lunch rush. Helena made herself a big salad while Larry waited in line for the day's special. Then they found themselves a table away from the crowds. Helena noticed quite a few looks of surprise cast in her direction. Larry was infamous for his attempts to get the prettiest woman in the company to have lunch with him. And Helena certainly qualified. It wasn't that Larry was totally unattractive. He had a kind of boyish charm, even though his hair was going gray and he always looked a bit pallid, because, see, he spent so much of his time in the lab. It was just because he was such a dog. A few female employees at Gargantuan had made the mistake of going out with him, and it was clear he was all about the conquest. Rather, he was all about the telling of the conquest, which he did with great relish whenever he'd get any other, inevitably male, co-worker to listen to him. "So what is this about, really?" he asked Helena as they sat down. "It's like I said, Larry, I'm interested in the marketing implications of your research. But you don't know what my research is about. I mean the new magnet thingy. Does it have other uses that I can talk about?" "Yeah, so does it?" Larry suddenly got very interested in his roast beef and mumbled something. "Maybe. Depends." "Depends? What's in it for me?" "Helping out the company. Fame." "Hmm. I think it's too early for that. The boss would have told me to spill my guts to you if that was the case. No, I think you're fishing for some other reason." "No, honestly," Helena said. She looked right in his eyes. She was convincing, but Larry was a crafty bugger. "Hmm. I still don't buy it. What possible reason could I want to know other than to get a new marketing process started?" "I don't know. Maybe you've been compromised." "Have you been compromised, you bad girl?" She tried to hide her reaction, but she was clearly thinking, "What a dick! I may be willing to tell you, but I'd like something in return," Larry said, and then cut himself a long slice of bloody beef, which he sucked between his teeth like it was pasta, not meat. "Ew," was Helena's reaction to that. "You know what I want," Larry said. "Okay, fine, I'll go out with you sometime." "Now, by go out, do you mean, I mean like on a date, like dinner someplace?" And who knows, Larry? Though I have to say, if you're continuing that with your meat, I'll call it off." "Doing what with my meat?" She rolled her eyes. "So, what are you doing in your secret lab? You know it's not even listed in the company directory anymore?" "Yep, I'm aware." "I can't come right out and tell you, though, or I'd breach my contract. However, What I can tell you is that your comic book theory is not too far off the mark. Don't look so surprised. The boss told me what you were asking about. Anyway, it's true. When used in conjunction with other gene splicing techniques, we can alter DNA. And we can do it to living organisms. Like, we finished with animal trials, and we started with human trials. Jesus. Yep, it shit hit the fan seeker for that reason. They're not approved, of course. In fact, they're highly illegal. Why would you do that? How could you allow it? Helena asked, remembering Oberon, which was going to be illegally launched later that day. Hey, it was his idea. I wanted to upgrade chimps, but he had other plans. Upgrade chimps? Now I've said too much. Any more would have to be pillow talk. Only every woman I've ever shtupped. So, when shall I have the pleasure of your company? He slurped more flank steak. Ew, I'm sure you don't want this conversation relayed to the boss. So why don't we just pick a time? Say, how about tonight? I insist. Why don't we meet at La Planteur at 8? Do you know it? Yep, Helena sighed. Okay. She smiled her most pleasant marketer smile and said, I'll see you at 8. I'd guess Helena would characterize this as a bad day. As much as her see you next Tuesday had helped her in her career, it had stimulated as much or more annoyance. Of course, being ordered to have a threesome with Shoot and blackmailed into having sex with Larry seemed a bit more like misery than annoyance. In a few short hours, she'd wrestled and lost with the lizard twice, but at least she discovered what was happening to Nick. You have been listening to Marvelous Harry, a novel in 5 fractals, written and performed by Mark A. Rayner. For more information about where you can purchase a copy of Marvelous Harry, go to marvelousharry.ca.